Hi everyone, I'm Julie Gunlock, and welcome to IWF's Facebook Live broadcast. Today I'm here with a very good friend, Jeff Steyer. He's with the Consumer Choice Center. He's a senior fellow there, and luckily he has his pal BB with him. Jeff, do you want to show us BB?
Is BB chilling out with us? I love you know him as BB the harm reduction dog.
Jeff, thanks for joining us today, or thank you for joining me.
My pleasure.
Tell us before we get started, we're here to talk about today is World No Tobacco Day, an important day created by the World Health Organization to encourage people to stop smoking traditional cigarettes, and to point out that traditional cigarettes are deadly. They do cause cancer. And I know that you cover this issue quite a bit for the Consumer Choice Center. Tell us a little bit about the Consumer Choice Center. What does it do, and what specific issues do you work on?
Well, the Consumer Choice Center represents consumers around the world, and we believe that consumers should have choice. We believe that there should be appropriate regulation for consumer products, but that consumers are best suited to make individual decisions about their lives based on their circumstances. So we represent consumers who want to be able to make those choices. Very often, when there is no regulation in place, activist groups will call for overburdensome regulation that kind of is one size fits all. What we try to do is represent consumers who, for whatever reasons, if they're a smoker and they want to vape, if they want a convenience product that the left wants to ban, if they want to get rid of styrofoam cups or plastic bags, we're not in favor of smoking, of littering, of killing the fish in the ocean. We think that those who call for more regulations don't have or shouldn't have, it is critical, they shouldn't have a monopoly on what's in the public interest. So you can be in favor of the environment, in favor of public health, but also point out where it's appropriate to have more limited regulations. All too often, activists have too much control over the regulators, over lawmakers, who don't want to be seen as being in favor of littering or in favor of some activity that the government doesn't like, and they'll go too far. And we often recognize the unintended consequences of legislation, of regulation, of taxes, even of warning labels, and speak out on behalf of consumers, usually for a more limited regulatory approach. And this is not a partisan issue. It's not even left or right. We represent people across the political spectrum. Who recognize that they know what's better for themselves than somebody in Washington, someone in their state capitol, or even someone at the city council.
You know, it's interesting that you say that consumers are are best suited to make the choices that are best for them, which is a perfect segue into talking about World No Tobacco Day. And again, this WHO design or designated day to recognize the need to stop smoking traditional cigarettes. And yet the WHO and many international organizations don't pr approve of vaping. In fact, they are working really hard to put barriers in place for people who may want to vape. Tell me a little bit about the international sort of outlook. What's it like out there, and why it's kind of funny that we're both recognizing this day again that's been designated by the WHO that doesn't seem to recognize one of the most effective smoking cessation tools, and that is e-cigarettes.
That is, and let's go back to basics. The first thing to recognize is maybe the name of the day is a little bit misguided, but I think it's a good thing. I think it's appropriate for governments, and if the WHO represents governments or pressures governments is a story for another day, but recognizing for just the conversation that the WHO is quasi-governmental, the fact that it's encouraging people not to smoke is, in our view at the Consumer Choice Center, that's okay. That's an appropriate role of government to tell them about the dangers of smoking. But they went off course by naming it World No Tobacco Day. Tobacco is not what kills in America 480,000 people. It's the combustion of the tobacco. It's burning the tobacco and inhaling it. So in Sweden, for example, it's the only country that's reached the goal for a very low smoking rate. In Sweden, they use a product called snus. It's a moist tobacco product. It's not healthy. nobody should start using it. I'm not trying to encourage pregnant women to start smoking. But it is far less harmful than smoking a cigarette because it is non-combustible. And in Sweden, especially among men, there's a very low rate of smoking. And we can learn.
Is snus like chew?
It's not chew. You don't chew it. You don't spit it. It's a little pouch. You put it in your upper lip. It's not pleasant looking. It's not, you know, there's nothing good about it other than it replaces cigarette smoking.
So right.
World Health Organization, I think, is a little bit off target by calling it World No Tobacco Day. It should be World No Smoking Day because that's where the danger comes from. The FDA has said the vast majority of disease and death that comes from tobacco use, from using even nicotine, comes from the burning of the tobacco. So the WHO went off course there and naming it a little bit off, and they continue to go off course because to them, they don't make that distinction between the combustion. In other countries, we don't have it here. They have heated tobacco. Japan has seen a huge decline in smoking rates as the IQOS heated tobacco. There's tobacco in it, but they heat it and they get the satisfaction. And they're not doing anywhere near the harm that you do from smoking a combustible cigarette. So whether it's vaping, whether it's snus, whether it's IQOS, all of the different products have some risk, different risks, but they are all targeted at adult smokers and adult smokers who switch, especially those who switch and stop smoking completely, do a tremendous amount of good for themselves. So when the World Health Organization, following their Twitter today, when they say that so many people die from tobacco use, they are being misleading. Because in our strange world, e-cigarettes are considered to be tobacco use, even though there's no tobacco in them. Even zero nicotine is considered by the US FDA to be a tobacco product. And when the WHO says all of these people are dying or getting sick from tobacco use, it's not from e-cigarettes. It's not even from snus or heated tobacco. It's from combustible tobacco. Yeah. The WHO should get their terminology right, which will lead to hopefully better policy making.
But we see a lot of this misleading kind of information, not just from the WHO. We see it from the FDA. We see it from especially activist groups, many of which are funded by Michael Bloomberg, which is so interesting. I just wrote a piece in the Washington Examiner, and I'd like to talk to you a little bit about, well, I know that Michael Bloomberg is a favorite subject of yours and mine. We've both written quite a bit about his sort of nanny nature, I guess you could say, his need to nanny all of us. And I talk a little bit about that in my piece. I talk about, you know, how he did that. He attempted a drink size ban in New York of sugary beverages. He banned trans fat. He encouraged New Yorkers not to salt their food and told restaurants to take it off the take salt off the table, while the New York Times was documenting him salting his own pepperoni pizza and saltine crackers. So, you know, do as I say, not as I do with Mayor Bloomberg. And, you know, doing things like making restaurants post menu calorie information. So he did a lot of this sort of, you know, these regulations aimed at making people healthier. And yet here you have a product, the e-cigarettes, that again, do not combust, they don't burn, they don't release 7,000 chemicals, and you're not breathing in smoke. They are 95% less harmful than traditional cigarettes. So this is a classic harm reduction product, like needle exchanges, like methadone clinics, like condom distribution. These are things that Bloomberg is generally for, but he's against this particular kind of harm reduction. Why do you think that is? It's really baffling to me after watching him for so long that he's not backing this particular way of making people healthier.
You would think he'd be calling for government handouts.
Free, everyone gets help.
Yeah, I would think he would do that. And for those of our viewers who don't know, we're talking from New York City today, where it all started with Mayor Bloomberg. And he is funding the WHO. He has a disproportionate amount of influence. I mentioned earlier that the WHO is a quasi-governmental organization. It has, it's not governmental, but it certainly has government members. U.S. taxpayers are the biggest funders of WHO. And Mayor Bloomberg has asserted his influence as a private citizen, former Mayor Bloomberg, by being a very large donor and having a great deal of control on this quasi-governmental body by making donations. Could you imagine if, I don't know, a wealthy American decided to be a major contributor to the Center for Disease Control and then was able to help them make policy? It's scandalous.
Yeah.
And what they do as well, by the way, with the WHO, is they also, Bloomberg and others, pay journalists. They give them a scholarship. They give them to come cover WHO events. And then it's reported on in publications like the Washington Post through the Associated Press and elsewhere. So they're able to use their money to influence not only the government agency, but the media's coverage of it.
Yeah.
So getting back to why does Mayor Bloomberg, why is he so opposed to this public health product, to this benefit to public health? And I think it lies in an underlying ideology and his need to protect the public policy approach he's taken. So the big picture, you recall a few years ago, I wrote about here in New York City when he was mayor, the city banned donations to homeless shelters.
That's right.
And they had all these nutritional guidelines, so much salt, so much sugar. And if the food doesn't meet the guideline for a New York City homeless shelter, my synagogue a block and a half away was not able to donate. They're very expensive, kosher, healthy, some of it healthy food that was still wrapped, still kept in the refrigerator to a nearby homeless shelter that was being done very quietly on a Saturday night. Somebody would bring over the food to the nearby homeless shelter, and Mayor Bloomberg's health department or his homeless department stopped it. No food donations to New York City run shelters because they couldn't control. And that is part of this underlying ideology. The city said, we are giving them, these homeless people, the needs that their nutritional needs are being met by the government. We don't need synagogues, churches, any people of goodwill to give of themselves to people in the community who are in need. The government will take care of it all. So e-cigarettes are a private sector, free market solution. There's a problem. Smoking is a problem. The government has spent hundreds of millions of dollars on instituting taxes, warning labels, education, all that the government has done. Smoking rates have come down, but certainly not enough. And then the private sector was able to come forward with an innovation that adult smokers are choosing on their own free will, going into vape shops where they're getting educated about how to quit smoking. This is a private sector solution. It cuts to the heart of the Bloomberg-style approach that only the government can take care of you, and we're here to protect you from the private sector. And cigarettes burst that bubble. They're a private sector solution, which is why they're a very threat to Mayor Bloomberg and everything his view represents, that you, the people, should give us, who know better, control over how you live to tax things, regulate things, warn about things, and of course ban things, because we know what's best for you.
Yeah, I think there's the added thing. You know, it's interesting. I think there's also something about what e-cigarettes have done, and you're right that it's a private sector solution that has proven to really work. I mean, millions of people have stopped traditional combustible cigarettes once they've switched to an electronic cigarette. And it's really compelling stuff. If you go to the FDA website, you read people have put comments in on proposed restrictions on vape flavors or certain types of electronic cigarettes. Their testimony is compelling, talking about how I tried everything. I tried hypnosis. I tried, I tried cold turkey. I tried patches. I tried gum, and nothing worked. And finally, the vape pen worked. And it's really, there's some pretty emotional testimony as well, which we've tried to catalog. But, you know, I'd like to also switch to the fact that Mayor Bloomberg often fashions himself. We have one comment here. He fashions himself as an enlightened feminist. And what I find so galling as a woman is that there is, and look, I don't expect the average person to sort of know these, about these scientific studies, but it's very an easily Googled fact that women have a much harder time quitting traditional cigarettes than men. And there's a whole bunch of reasons why. I mean, from, you know, women having menstrual cycles and having much more cravings, to neurobiologically, they don't react to patches and gum the way men do, having to do with their neurotransmitters. And I won't bore you with all of that, but it's really fascinating that women do not react. There are two approved products in the marketplace now, FDA-approved product, patches and gum, and they do not react well to those. The other option, of course, is just quit or die, which is what the FDA tells women to do. So what studies have also shown is that women sort of like the habits associated with smoking, the hand to mouth. They like the taste and the feel, and they also like the appetite suppressant qualities of the of cigarettes. And so this mimics that. E-cigarettes sort of mimic that. And I think that is one of the problems that e-cigarettes has, and why Mayor Bloomberg has a problem with it, is it's too close. I mean, I know that sounds simplistic, but I do think that in some ways it mimics too much the look of a traditional cigarette, and that irritates Bloomberg. I firmly believe that he thinks it's just too close, whereas the patch could be hidden.
You're doing something for pleasure that I don't do, so why do you need it?
Right. Right. I think there's just, I think that's part of the issue, but it does irritate me also. It becomes, when you realize, when you look at the science of this and how disadvantaged female smokers are, you realize that this is having access to e-cigarettes, especially for women, is a uniquely women's issue. It's a really important women's health issue. And then you have activists like this who are misinforming women, telling women that e-cigarettes are just as dangerous, or that there's, you know, I'd also like to talk to you a little bit, if we can switch gears a little bit, if we can talk about Juul. I have another comment here, is talking about Juul, what is it, and why are so many attacking the products? Talk a little bit, if you can, about the whole Juul and teens, the sort of moral crisis out there of, you know, of teens enjoying Juul, which in fact, I talked to another friend of ours, Michelle Minton, on a podcast, and she said, you know, Juul isn't just popular with teens, it's popular with everyone. It is the number one e-cigarette out there. So tell us why there's this panic about Juul.
So I find it fascinating. I think one of the reasons that Mayor Bloomberg and others hated e-cigarettes is because the tobacco companies, which have done very bad things in the past, they had enough money to buy some of the successful e-cigarette startups. E-cigarettes were not started by tobacco companies, but
right.
They had money, and they bought some good products and tried to innovate them and make them better and use their knowledge of the marketplace to get them out there. That's a good thing. But anything done by big tobacco is considered, in today's public policy realm, evil, bad, and not to be believed.
Right.
I'd accept that for a moment. Except you've got Public Health England talking about e-cigarettes, the government of England, even the FDA acknowledges their less harmful nature. But for a long time, I thought the opposition maybe was driven by, they link it to big tobacco. Big tobacco is bad. We don't want big tobacco to profit from these new products, so we're against them. That held true up until the past few months, when Juul, which is a technology company, they make a, people have called it the Apple or the iPhone of vaping. It's a sleek, attractive, easy to use product that is targeted to adult smokers. It is they've got flavors like creme brulee. Those are not. I can't imagine.
Yeah, I love it when the activists say, you know, these flavors are targeting kids, including creme brulee. I'm like, what kid? What? I mean, I know they also have things like gummy bears and cotton candy. That seems more, but creme brulee is not a kid's
thing. Let's just be very clear. Juul does not.
No, it does not. No, Juul does not. But there are others out there. But creme brulee is not.
None of the reputable companies today are selling those flavors.
Right.
There's a consensus emerging among rational people in this space that certain flavors the certain names of flavors, such as gummy bear, maybe do too much to attract kids and aren't necessary. But
right.
It's important to recognize that flavors are not important. They're critical. They're essential to getting adult smokers to quit. Adults like sweet flavors. They like the complex flavors, and they learn to like, and this is such a fascinating idea, that adult smokers think they like smoking. I spoke with a legislator a couple of weeks ago who said she quit smoking because she liked it. Well, I think what she liked was that experience that you talked about. This is a legislator in Israel, a member of Knesset, and she said, I don't want to quit smoking. And it was honest, maybe, but I don't think she liked smoking. I think she liked some of the pleasure and relaxation that she got from smoking. And e-cigarettes replicate, as you said earlier, replicate a lot of those good things without killing you.
Right.
And so what happened was the Bloombergs of the world were against the big tobacco companies because it's an ideological thing. And they got stuck in that ideological approach, veered away from the science, and became anti-e-cigarette. Then, and it was always, well, this is big tobacco, Juul came along, as did other companies like Enjoy, with a stated purpose, aligned with that of public health, to put cigarette businesses out of business and create, think about this in the innovation context, right? Here's an iPhone. I don't have a landline. I've got one behind me. It doesn't work right, so I never use it. Why would anybody want an old outdated product like a rotary phone when you have innovative new products? We shouldn't even have to convince people to switch from a rotary phone to a high quality cell phone. Yet here we have governments using taxpayer dollars and the WHO trying to tamp down the use of the new innovative product. But the amazing thing about the Juul phenomenon is it's a company that wants to put the cigarette industry out of business, and they're still against it. Why? Well, it's not because they're big tobacco. I believe it goes back to that idea that Bloomberg and that crowd, their entire industry, the public health industry, relies on we the people giving up some element of control to tax and regulate us because we're told that the private sector only does harm. And you need the government to protect you from the private sector. That, I believe, is what's driving the hardcore opposition to e-cigarettes, because it takes away the whole legitimacy, the whole need actually to prove science when regulating. We don't need science. We can say plastics are destroying our oceans. And then New York City, as they're trying to do now, but ban styrofoam, single-serve styrofoam.
And straws.
And straws and plastic bags in the state of New York. The idea is that they want us to be in a place where you can no longer challenge that. You can no longer question it, because if you do, you're in favor of destroying the ocean.
Right, exactly. So I just want to give a shout out to Hello Lance, who gave us a thumbs up. Jeff's definitely worth a thumbs up. And hello Luann, who says hi to us. And if anybody's listening out there and you have comments about how e-cigarettes helped you quit, I think that's, I'd love to mention them. But you know,
if there's anybody watching that have used e-cigarettes or some other harm reduction approach to quit smoking, especially people who appreciated the flavors, telling us is great, but what's critical, and this is what we do at the Consumer Choice Center, is we empower consumers to engage. I'll tweet it, Jeff A. Steyer on Twitter, I'm sure you'll retweet it, is you can comment, you have a voice. The other side is using their voice. And by the way, there are very few anti-tobacco activists out there. They're not paid by the government through some grant, through some activist group. And they are pushing hard to ban flavors that help adult smokers quit. There's a deadline coming up, and it is essential. Hearing from me or you is great, but the FDA needs to hear from smokers who used flavors to quit. It's an opportunity to tell your story to the FDA. They are required by law to read what you said. It's the only time. I write a lot, you write a lot. No one's required to read what we write. Here you've got a chance to have...
But also don't think you have to write some 100-page document. You write, write a couple paragraphs of why this helped you quit. Tell a compelling story. I've seen two-sentence comments that have brought me to tears. It's really worth your time to go to the FDA website. And if you go to either Jeff's... Twitter account or me, I'm at Jay Gunlock. We'll tweet out the link after this so you can do that. And it's really worthwhile doing that, because look, the FDA is and it's, but it's not just the FDA. It's a lot of local governments that are coming down hard. San Francisco, which is shocking, and that's like a whole nother Facebook Live. I always say it's a whole nother Oprah show to go into that. But San Francisco has this long history of harm reduction, again with condom distribution, needle exchanges, methadone clinics. You know, and they are one of the toughest cities on vaping. So it's very frustrating.
One of the most pro-smoking cities by taking away alternatives. And I don't think that's what their intent
was. That's exactly right. You know, that's the other thing that is, we see this, these efforts, you know, when you attempt to take, for instance, banning flavors, I mean, you're really making it harder for people to use e-cigarettes, obviously, to get what they need to quit. And those people, and the problem is, they will go back to cigarettes, they will go back to combustibles. And so you're right, it's actually a pro-smoking, traditional smoking policy when you're trying to ban either flavors or e-cigarettes. Go ahead.
Can I say why flavors are so important? Because a lot of, I don't smoke cigarettes. A lot of people don't get it. And I don't think the FDA is really getting it until they hear from consumers. Cigarettes have this tobacco flavor. There are other flavors that are added to them that are allowed. E-cigarettes are propylene glycol or vegetable glycol. It allows them to create that vapor. Some of them have nicotine, some of them don't, and flavor. Without the flavor, it doesn't give that level of satisfaction that the smoker likes. They come in different flavors. They right. come in tobacco flavor, and tobacco flavored e-cigarettes are flavored with a tobacco flavor. There's no tobacco in them. Though the FDA some time has been saying, we don't want to touch tobacco flavored e-cigarettes. I'm not sure why. But they want to go after other, the sweet flavors, the fruity flavors. And those, what we're learning is from surveys with smokers who quit, is it's those sweet flavors. Very often they'll switch to a tobacco flavored e-cigarettes because it's most similar. And then they'll experiment with something else because it wasn't satisfying them or they didn't like the tobacco flavor. And they're finding they actually never liked the flavor of burnt tobacco.
Right. Right.
They thought they did, like my dog Bibi, they learned by association and they liked the experience and said, oh, I must like tobacco. And then they're shocked to learn they actually didn't like the burning tobacco in their mouth. I could understand why. They liked the experience with e-cigarettes with flavors other than tobacco, especially non-tobacco flavor. You're getting a sweet experience, a pleasurable taste in your mouth and not that burning sensory killing flavor of burnt tobacco, and you come to realize you never liked the burnt tobacco flavor. You liked the experience, and now you can get it without smoking, and you get your taste back, and you're not smoking, you're not killing yourself. And consumers are surprised to learn that they didn't like tobacco flavor.
Yeah. Yeah.
So these other flavors are critical to get people off of cigarettes and to keep them off, because we won't need any government-funded campaigns to tell vapers who enjoy their flavors not to go back to combustible cigarettes, in the same way we don't need a government-funded campaign to prevent the scourge of rotary phones. You don't want to go back because you've got a better product. We have to.
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting.
The better product.
It's interesting that you talk a little bit about, you know, the different, we've both been talking about the different strategies of the activists and of the regulators. And one thing that I've seen is now they're starting to attack. And you mentioned this early on. You said, you know, the WHO calls it World No Tobacco Day, which is really, again, tobacco is not, does not cause cancer. It's the burning of it, right? And so it's a little bit misleading. It's a lot misleading, rather. But now you see that, you know, because, and you can tell the vaping industry, the e-cigarette industry, you know, has good arguments, right? And the studies on e-cigarettes, 95% less harmful, blah, blah, blah. But now you start to see attacks on nicotine.
Yeah. And just to adjust a word you said, I think you meant to say that nicotine does not cause cancer.
I'm sorry. You know, what did I say?
Nicotine is the new killer. The FDA approves it in the gum in the past.
Yeah.
It's the route of delivery from those products which are ineffective. So nicotine is not the problem. Tobacco is not safe. Nicotine is not safe. Nobody should start using it. Certainly not kids. But it's that distinction between nicotine, there's a distinction between nicotine and tobacco, and then the combustible tobacco is the most dangerous form. And we mentioned that you asked before about Juul and kids. There is a very, it's not even hidden anymore. There is a concerted campaign against Juul. There is more talk about Juul being used in schools, I believe, than actually Juul being used in schools.
Right, I agree.
Newspapers. It is a radio show host said to me yesterday, Juul must be thrilled about all of the free press they're getting from these activist groups, because if you don't know much about e-cigarettes, even if you're a non-smoker, the best way to learn about it is, you know, you read in the paper how they're kids using them, and they're coming all these wonderful flavors, and they're sleek, as if that should be a reason to ban them. The issue with Juul and teens is very clear. There is a benefit that the FDA recognized for adult smokers to have satisfying, appealing alternatives that are less harmful than the cigarette. We need to protect adult smokers. At the same time, kids should never use any of these products. Period, full stop. I believe that the government has the ability to be able to make that distinction. E-cigarettes are already banned for minors. You can't blame Juul for being an effective alternative to cigarettes.
In fact,
cigarette rates have gone down. Smoking rates among youth have gone down for years. They've gone down more sharply over the past few years, according to the mainstream studies. 5 years ago, if we were having this conversation, we would have been using the word gateway all the time. Gateway, e-cigarettes are a gateway to smoking, because they knew e-cigarettes weren't that harmful. They said they're a gateway to smoking. If cigarette smoking rates were going down and have gone down more sharply, in the same time there's been an increase, an alarming increase, in the rate of e-cigarette use by youth, which they should never do. Why hasn't the smoking rate gone up among youth? It's because it's not a gateway. Right. I posit to you that the data suggests that the reason e-cigarette use has gone up at the very same time smoking rates have gone down among youth is because kids are choosing Juul or other e-cigarettes and perhaps marijuana instead of smoking cigarettes. None of them should be doing that. But right? I say that every time.
Can I ask you a question about that vaping has gone up? Aren't the numbers kind of skewed there? Because don't they sort of put everything that's not a traditional cigarette in one, like hookahs and chew and all sorts of stuff into one big dumping?
There are studies that look at vapor use. A lot of those studies have been, I would say, purposefully misleading in order to promote the political agenda. And the reason I say that is because when we look at cigarette use, we look at daily smoking. A lot of the studies, the government studies, the big studies, look at once in 30-day use. That is a 16-year-old is at a party, sees a cigarette, tries it once, never goes back to it. If they get captured in that survey, they become a vapor, a teen vapor, according to these studies. When they may not have ever tried it again, they certainly haven't gone on to smoke. So they get captured in the data because the questions are being asked the wrong way. Right. I think the purpose to further an agenda, the questions we ought to be asking and the government should be asking is what level of daily e-cigarette use is there among teens? And then would those teens have otherwise been smoking cigarettes?
Well, you know, obviously as the mother of three boys, I am in full agreement. I don't ever want my children trying these products. I don't want them. But it's also interesting to see some of the misleading information that's directed at moms. And what frustrates me, and the utter panic about Juul, and what frustrates me, and I'm not, you know, I'm not, it's like with condom distribution. I'm not saying like, I want kids to have, you know, sex, you know, underage, but you know, there are measures there to protect against diseases and pregnancy. And so moms should also have that information. I mean, we're not going to say no one should use condoms because they're only like 90% effective or whatever the number is. I mean, yes, there's some risk with products, you know, with e-cigarettes, But moms shouldn't be told that they're exactly the same as smoking a traditional cigarette. I mean, that doesn't do anybody any good. And certainly as a mother, if my child is going to be experimenting with something, I'd certainly want them experimenting with a thing that's 95% less harmful. Again, this is a really hard argument to make because you always come off like you're saying, hey, you know, tell them to try this one because it doesn't hurt anything. I mean, again, it's a it's a tough issue, but I think moms deserve, I've always said, like, tell moms the truth. Let them make an informed decision. And I've seen a lot of the same kind of alarmism of other products, just misinformation, because I think they fear if they tell people the truth, oh, this, you know, this thing is 95%, you know, safer, that there's going to be this rush to everybody start. That's not how people work. But go ahead.
I think the public health bubble, the people who work in so-called public health, are driven by an ideology. You and I and our friend, Dr. Henry Miller, there are a handful of people out there who are science-based, driven by the science. We go where the science takes us no matter what, regardless of what people will say about your position. And I believe that for the public health community, the best thing they can do to support really the public health is to be honest about the science, because if they overstate the science, they will eventually lose all credibility. And we do need a public health establishment that is trusted by the public, because otherwise they're not going to do any good.
Right. Well, listen, you know, again, this is World No Tobacco Day. And I agree with you. I think we should change the name to that, to World No Smoking Day, No Combustible, No Traditional Smoking Day. But I think, I hope that we've highlighted today how e-cigarettes are actually, I think, are really a promising way that we could reach no smoking day, no actual combustible smoking day. It is such a promising tool for people who again struggle so much to stop smoking. So I hope we've given a little bit better information out there. And thanks so much for joining me, Jeff.
Thanks, Julie, and congratulations again on your piece. I've been following this issue for a long time, and rarely have I seen in the mainstream media an article that talks about women's health in the honest way that you talked about. It's stripping away that political, ideologically devoid of science approach. You were honest with your readers, and I congratulate you for that.
Thanks very much. Thank you, Jeff. And thank you to Bibi also for listening today. Your contributions were really impressive.
Bibi, the harm reduction dog.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and thanks to all that listened. We'll have another Facebook Live in a couple weeks. Thanks for tuning in. Bye, Jeff.
Bye. Thank you.